are you people? It is the Starship Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN.
More State of the Union drama. President plans to move ahead, but where will it be? Is it going to? The plan is that he's already asked the Sergeant at Arms to schedule a walkthrough for the State of the Union, and that was canceled last week, but now it seems to be going ahead. However, they say their backup plan is to move it outside of Washington, D.C.
18th tee, Mar-a-Lago.
I know. That would look great optics.
Everybody gather around.
By the way, everybody enjoying your Trump steaks.
Well done.
And your Trump wine. Best wine Virginia ever made.
Could be some product placement going on, yeah. You know, in the State of the Union.
Yeah, I wouldn't. Yeah.
Perfect.
Could see it happening. You know, this is such a mistake by Nancy Pelosi. She's giving an opportunity for a fight. The people, I think, who would like to see the United States heal itself, I don't think, you know, Donald Trump is a pugilistic guy. He's just going to be what he is. He wants to punch guys in the face. That's his whole life. You're not going to get around that, and he's going to punch you. Why get into a fight with him? Why drag him? Why get into this fight over this? This is of all the things.
Of all the things, right.
Right.
And he's not going to submit it in writing. I know we can go back in history and say that has happened, but that's not what he's going to do.
No. And it's been the tradition. I mean, why? Republicans, Donald Trump specifically, and Republicans a little bit more generally, not all of them, but some of them, you know, are blowing up all of the traditions and institutions that Americans have come to at least expect. Maybe not always want, but expect. And now she's helping blow up another one. Stop it. There's no good comes of this. And then he's going to, and I think she would have won more by sitting in back of him at the State of the Union address while he's attacking her.
True.
Right? And she just sits back there and, you know, because that's all I do at the State of the Union is stare at the two people who are trying to act like they're not there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you're going to have, they don't even have Mike Pence there. They have the Mike Pence wax figure sits there. And then it's going to be her, and she could steal the show with facial expressions if she were capable of making them.
I knew you were going to say that.
I mean, that's
and then
the
give
only
a
thing.
Response afterwards,
right.
Which, you know, is traditional, and yeah. She could make a statement there as well. But she gave him two choices, delay it or submit it in writing, neither of which it appears the president or the White House plans to take.
No. Let him do it next Tuesday. Let's do it. I mean, first of all, I just think he's the president of the United States. Let's you know, I feel this way about all States of the Union, State of the Union's addresses. You know what I mean?
Is it like attorneys general?
No, State of the Union addresses. There we go.
Addresses.
Yeah.
Sounds right.
For all of those, I just want to get through it. I just want to get to it. We know we have to cover it, and most of us have to sit through it, and most Americans don't really want to sit through it, and it's very stagey. It's the same thing. They get up, and they say one or two things that get everybody together. Then they say things where half the chamber gets up. Then then they point at somebody up there that the First Lady has brought in.
Right.
Who's some his heroic story, and then everybody gets up and applauds, and then they sit back down, and then they say something else that only half the room gets up for. Then they try to end on a big note of everybody coming together, and then they walk out, and then everybody tries to get an autograph of the speech. That's it.
New York Times reporting that Senate leaders have reached a bipartisan deal that could reopen the government for a couple of weeks, which would allow the State of Union of the Union address to proceed.
The State of the Union address can proceed no matter
what.
This is a made up, as much as everything else about this whole shutdown fiasco is, this is just as much a made up deal. They've got it secured. Don't worry about it. It's going to be fine. Go.
So they have two deals the Senate's going to vote on Thursday, according to the New York Times. One that would simply extend funding for all the agencies that are shut down. The other that includes the $5.7 billion for the border wall and see what passes.
Well, I don't think he's going to get $5.7, but he's going to get, you know, if you get $5.7 total that takes care of everything and they get some DACA out of it, I think Democrats go for it. But the idea of a 3-year extension of protection for the deferred action program for the kids of immigrants, and then the protected persons deal, that was all temporary anyway. If they get a little bit more of an extension, the idea of it's 3 years, and that allows Trump during the during the, I think he believes, and I think his campaign people believe, that he gets a chance to then campaign on overturning that after 2020.
Right.
I gave it to him just to get through this, and now I got he'll claim he got his wall no matter what he gets. And then he says, and then we're going to throw all the kids out in 2021 if you vote for me. And that'll be a campaign issue. And we'll see how far that goes.
Well, if the Senate votes on these two bills, it could be an immediate end to the government shutdown. And this is kind of what Democrats wanted. If the second bill is the one that passes, the one that just would extend the funding for the agencies that are shut down, because that's what Democrats had said, let's just open government and then talk about answers. Republicans felt like, well, you're not going to give us the answers we want if we don't do this. But if they just open up government, then that seems to be one of the paths that's possible on Thursday.
All right. Well, we'll see. I would rather see it. Actually, you should do it from the first tee at Mar-a-Lago. Look at this beautiful golf course behind me. Just take a look at it. Wouldn't you like to be a member?
Is it members? It's members only? That's no guests. Like, yeah. It's no public access at all.
$500,000 a ticket now. It went up since he became president.
Oh, shocker.
To join.
Gosh.
Like, that's not in conflict of interest in any way, shape, or form.
So they wouldn't allow you and Kev to just walk out there and
no.
play a few?
No, I don't think so. All right, let's check now with Kim Gordon and find out what's going on in the WGN newsroom.
Ro, it looks like Chicago's mayoral ballot is finally complete.
Watch for Chicago's very own stories with Micah and Joe, Micah Mater and Joe Donlin, weeknights on WGN-TV News at 9 o'clock.
Speaking of WGN-TV News, here is Mr. Benjamin Bradley from the WGN-TV Newsroom.
What a beautiful day in Chicago.
Yes, gorgeous. Absolutely. You know, if we just say that, maybe we'll feel better about it.
Yeah, went out for Starbucks, nearly did a cartwheel in the parking lot.
Oh, I know. I noticed that, too. I took my mom to a medical appointment downtown in parking lot. We nearly both took a header.
Yeah, be careful.
Pretty tough.
Be careful.
I'm looking out the window back here. So CLTV can see this.
Mm-hmm.
And they can look out. Yeah, you can actually.
Also, anyone with a window can see it. Yes, but go ahead.
Yes, but I'm saying out this window.
Is that unique to here? Are you sure?
I just want to say, as we look down, it's a pretty good shot of down the river, going down the river out toward Lake Michigan. And you can barely see the Ferris wheel because now it's being, this is like intensive grapple rain sleet.
Oh, you're using those great weather.
Anytime you turn the word grapple in, we all do a shot.
Yeah. Now, there was a warning. I got to ask Tom Skilling about this coming up at 4 o'clock. There was a warning issued by the National Weather Service over the weekend for, it was like violent freezing. Like water or something. It was like some...
You could tell the meteorologists out in Romeoville had a little fun with it. Now, keep in mind, they haven't been paid for a month, so we're just lucky that they're still putting out forecasts.
I couldn't figure out what it meant. It was like shards of glass in the air is basically what they were saying, and I don't understand it.
It's kind of what it feels like outside right now.
Yes.
It's a good way to describe
Ouch.
It.
Yeah. All right. So it's beautiful. It's January. This is the worst of it, people. We're in the worst of it. If we can still smile... Then we're doing something.
Oh, Ro, you're so optimistic.
Yes.
I love it. Where did that come from?
I know where.
Actually, I have to tell you about this story that we're doing this afternoon at 5 o'clock involving the big weekend snow. Shannon Halligan, who covers traffic for us, got a hold of some video that's been floating around the internet. A plow crew that was clearing the tarmac at O'Hare Airport.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all that snow has to go someplace, and when they're clearing it pretty close to the airport perimeter, they just shoot it over the fence. Well, we've got some amazing video of it landing on a car that flew by on the highway. And so much snow was turned out by this plow that it cracked the windshield of the car. Shannon talked to the driver. So
is it like shooting, like being blown out like a snowblower?
But it's a massive snowblower that they use there for the taxiways and runways.
I thought they have a melter. Don't they have a melter out there?
They do have a melter that they can put. It's a melting pad that they can kind of push some of that stuff into, you know, when they really run out of room for it. So,
ooh.
I tell you that only from the standpoint of it could be worse. You could be driving by O'Hare and accidentally get pelted with so much snow.
Was anybody hurt in the
He was not hurt, but his windshield, I mean, the video is wild. His windshield is totally busted up.
It is funny how when you look at like parking lots, how there are mountains, Everest-sized mountains in the parking lots. We haven't really had a total cumulative snow that's that high here.
No, we have not had much snow at all. You remember that year a couple of years back when they ran out of places to put the snow in the city? I think just started shipping it to Indiana.
That's what we do with all of our problems.
Here you go, Indiana.
And people who want to avoid the taxes. That's what we do. Yeah. We send our snow and people who want to avoid taxation.
Mm-hmm. And our gamblers.
Yes. And true. Right. Yeah, yep. Not for long, my friend.
Not for long.
Not for long, my friend. We're going to be doing a lot of gambling here in Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hey, did you hear? We finally have whittled down the mayoral candidates to 14.
Oh. Who didn't make the list?
Dorothy Brown. Kind of a shocker, but I should say not too surprising if you actually looked at her petition signatures. Lourdes did a story a couple of weeks back in which she pointed out that some of the signatures, I think even my 7-year-old could point out that they had clearly been signed by the same person, just signing a different name over and over and over again. But still rather surprising for a veteran politician like Dorothy Brown, who is traditionally, despite all of her problems, both in terms of efficiency of her office and the problem of a federal investigation into her own conduct, has managed to keep a lot of support. I think she got 47% of the vote in her Cook County Court Clerk's race back in 2016. She had hoped to be on the ballot for mayor, but today the Chicago Board of Elections booted her off, and she says she's not going to fight it.
Mm-hmm. She's got another thing she's about to fight, is my estimation.
Well, she's been fighting. You know what, though? You say that, but she has been under investigation for years. So to argue that something has changed now and is imminent, I don't see it. Especially considering the fine folks at the FBI aren't currently being paid. That's another story we're working on today.
Oh, that's a problem.
At 4 o'clock, we get into kind of some of the impact of the government shutdown on law enforcement, FBI, the U.S. Attorney's Office, and the courts. Did you know that the federal courts are going to run out of money on Friday?
And so, then what do they do?
So they civil cases... civil. There will be no new civil cases that are tried after Friday.
So if you have a court date,
yes,
and then already you get pushed back?
Already they've delayed more than 1,000 civil court cases involving the government. So if you know you're suing Social Security or the EPA is taking action against somebody and it's in court, more than 1,000 of those cases have been suspended because they've tried to cut back on the caseload as the money has run out at federal courts across the country. But, yeah, specifically here in Chicago, already 1,000 cases have been delayed. I'm told criminal jury cases will continue. Sorry, Ed Burke. But jurors will not be paid.
So I mean, so the guys are showing up every day at the FBI and not had a paycheck in 2 weeks?
Yeah, they will miss their second paycheck at the end of this week. And imagine that, you know. I know that's not easy. Well, but
under any circumstances,
no,
when Donald Trump talks about how, you know, don't worry about it, you're all patriots, you're doing it for the right reason. I'm just people who cannot make it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what I worry about is, you know, somebody who has a sensitive security position. You know, say somebody works for the TSA or somebody who works for the FBI, right? One of the first questions that the government asks when they're hiring you is, are you currently under any type of financial pressure, right? They do a credit check on you because they know somebody who is in serious financial trouble is vulnerable to corruption. And it is the government now putting the people who we rely on for our safety and security, flying and law enforcement, they are putting those people under serious financial duress. Now, the vast, vast majority are great people who would never succumb to, you know, any type of outside influence or pressure. But we all know that, you know, if you're under financial pressure and somebody comes to you and says, hey, I need you to do this thing and I'll make it go away, boy, that can be tough.
Yeah.
Right. Imagine that. Somebody under financial pressure who wants to lead the nation, also needs to get a deal done in some other country.
Connecting the dots, Ro.
What? I mean, imagine. I cannot imagine something like that happening. I just can't imagine it. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Ben Bradley,
we'll see you
on the WGN-TV News at 4, 5, 6, 9, and 10.
See you then.
Thank you very much, sir. Let us check in now with Kim Gordon. She's got the WGN News straight up from the radio station. Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis on the 7th to 20 to W, the T in the end.
That's us.
Now, I want to say that Tom Skilling will be here after 4 o'clock to explain what this freezing ice shard is that is in the air when you go outside. I don't know. There's like new definitions for it. We're finally getting to a point. You remember maybe when you were in school and they would say that culture is so important. You know, the Inuit people, the Eskimos,
yes,
have 30 different words for snow. Right? And now, and we were like, what? We got snow. What do you mean? What do you got snow? Now we have that. Now, if you go to the National Weather Service forecast, it tells you about things that are not just snow.
Like some of them are difficult to understand. You know, like the what exactly is the grappo?
Grapple.
Grappo is the drink.
Grappa is the drink. Grappo is something in the sky that falls. And there's something else. And it was like a violent freezing fog or something that they said over the weekend. And you're like,
terrible.
I don't even know what that is.
Terrifying.
I don't understand what does that mean?
That's kind of how it felt, though, because when you walk, it feels like the air is freezing on your skin.
So that's not good.
No. Now, that's a terrible feeling.
Is that part of the global warming experience? Because if it is, maybe I don't want that part. I have said to many people, I am all for the global warming. I am
living in Chicago.
Yes.
We're rooting for it here.
Yeah, whatever you want.
On days like this, or Friday, we might be rooting for it.
Yeah, build another pipeline. I don't know. what do you got to do?
More coal factories in China.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want them here, but I want them there.
Yeah, there.
I just got Tom's updated forecast, and it is absolutely a book. I mean, there is everything in this weather forecast you could possibly imagine.
Are there any strange weather words in there, like grapple
or snowicane? No, how about a snowicane?
No polar vortex, but
no, I
a lot
that
of
too.
Snow, rain, wintry mix.
It's just about
freezing
everything.
Surfaces, yes.
Yeah, I mean,
freezing all this rain.
Stuff you don't want.
It's not going to be good. There's just no two way. I'd like to be able to lie to you right now and tell you it's all going to be okay, but it's not.
Well, but it's nice.
Run
you
for the hills.
You just got your new Arctic Blast weather gear, and so you get to check it out again, Roa. You tried it out this weekend, and you get to put it on again.
I just want to tell you how much I love my snow pants. I almost wore them in today. But I realized that it's like, you know, when you're in school, you get some like new clothes you wear it, and your first day you have it. You're like, hey, everybody, look at my new plaid shirt. You know, I'm just trying to think, what am I going to do with my snow pants?
And you want people to compliment you on them? Or do guys not care about that? Like, you got some really
Kev,
cool
if I walked
sports
in
sports gear
with my snow pants, I don't think Kev would go, dude, cool snow pants.
Probably
don't you
not.
Secretly want that, though? Don't you wish, like, you just bought these really cool, like, snow pants?
Girls are totally different in that respect, I think, than
boys.
See,
I do like that one.
Maybe wear them to Sox Fest Friday, Row, because
I could.
It's going to be absolutely freezing on Friday.
They're black, and I could go, and it would be, you know, sort of in keeping with the thing.
Mm-hmm.
They're so comfortable because they're like lined inside, and they hug all my important parts.
Gosh.
And
it's impervious to all
this,
the rain and what?
Yeah.
Wet? Mm-hmm, no problems.
Right, and it's furry, soft, warm goodness in there, and I'm liking it.
So do you put them over regular jeans?
No.
Oh, you just go straight snow pants.
I'm commando. I go snow commando.
Wow. You don't need the long johns with something like that.
No.
What?
No, I didn't.
And then when you go indoors, you have to wear them.
Yeah, well,
that's the problem.
It's a little gamey. Yeah.
Grocery shopping, just lugging your way through up and down the aisles.
You stop by a friend's house.
Well, you know, they kind of breathe. I don't know. This is I got them at the Eddie Bauer. Thank you.
They do it nice.
And it was like, and I went to the mountain, you know, there's a section at the Eddie Bauer you go into, and there's a big mountain.
Yeah.
You know, they show you like a fake.
I'm intimidated by that section.
Right, it's got a sign that looks like a mountain. You're like, hey, I'm going to go to the mountain, see what's going on over there. And I was supposed to go to, planning on doing this thing over the holidays that was going to be very snowy and arctic-y. And I thought, well, I could go do that only if I get the right equipment for it. So I went and I bought, in early December, all this stuff.
Like, how far did you go? Did you get, like, an ice pick and things like that? Or, or were you just like
can I tell
cover
you,
your body
Can
stuff?
I tell you, I found out, though, I bought the ice pick, and then I found out they don't let it on TSA.
Oh.
Right? Like, you can't get on the plane with an ice pick in your hand. I don't know. That's one
Are
of
you
the
sure
things.
Even right now, with the shutdown?
Now you can, yeah. But before, I didn't anticipate that. I didn't factor that in. Anyway, I got, I got the pants. I got snow boots. Like, I got... cool snow boots. And then I got, the thermal wear that you wear underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to tell you, man, I didn't get to go do my thing. And it'll, change of plans. And so on Sunday, when it was sunny, but awful outside all at the same time, with freezing ice crystals that were penetrating my eyeballs, I decided that I was going to put on all this stuff and I was going to go walk to do my errands just to see if I could do it.
You get a new toy, you want to put it to use.
Yeah, right. I did.
The weather gear has come so far, too. It's like streamlined and it's not
crazy.
Like you can just totally move and lightweight. You're right.
And everybody loves to brag about it, too. I have people over for championships, but my buddy throws his feet up on the couch. He goes, "You see these socks right here?" I go, "Those are nice socks, man." He goes, "These are some crazy wool socks. Like, these are $30 a pair." I'm like, "Your feet sweating? Are they hot?" He's like, "No, breathable, but warm still."
See, now that's the thing, because there's the heat goes out, but doesn't the cold doesn't come in?
Right. It's
crazy. I don't know how they do this with this stuff.
He's like, "I love these socks, man." He was so excited to show them off.
See, so guys do say that to each
other. Kind of, I guess, sometimes.
Yeah. See these? This has got a battery in it.
It's got a battery.
My socks got a battery in it.
Eat them up?
Yeah.
Those are warm.
The only thing that was overly warm was the oldest of technology, because I was wearing one of those like Russian hats that was made out of an animal that probably I would not have wanted to see die, but I did it. Yeah.
There is.
But it's okay. I'm wearing it.
There are synthetics that work just as well.
Yeah, I don't think this one is, though. I keep telling myself it is. And I tell everybody around me that it is, because it actually looks like a dog I used to own. So I'm like, okay,
people are probably looking at you.
Right. And they're like, "What did you do? What did you do to Snuggles?"
Growls every now and again.
So I put it on. But then when I was walking in it, for 3 hours on Sunday, I was hot. I was sweating in it. Mm-hmm. And it was, and the wind chill was zero. I thought to myself, you know what? This is how the Russians beat the Nazis.
Yes.
Right?
And yes.
In the siege, right? Uh-huh. I mean, this is how they had those hats. Nazis didn't have a hat.
Totally unprepared.
Right. So I think that's the way it went.
I feel like the weather boots that you need for this weather do not work inside. Like, my feet are so toasty, overly toasty right now, because if you wore, just moderate boots, you wouldn't be okay.
Yeah.
And then you come inside, you need to bring the change.
Yeah.
That's why I have slippers. Look up in the camera.
Let's see.
That's a
you
pro
got the
move.
Yep.
Throw them in a bag.
Yep. Got my slippers.
I don't know about slippers.
Of course, I'm camping out at the office, too. So.
Yeah, I know. So Pam is also wearing her pajamas at
work
today.
Well, she lives in Indiana.
You
might not get home.
She's wearing pajamas and sunglasses.
I haven't gotten home. That is the thing. I need to do a blog just on how to camp out, like how to pull a Costanza at work.
Did you have the lake effect snow by you?
I don't know what I had by me,
but it was
because
really
I didn't go home.
Oh!
She apparently has not been home in a month. She's been moving around
so
between offices and sleeping.
I was like, I'm not going back. There's just no way.
And we have a shower here now.
Right.
This is true.
Right. I've got a towel, that green towel in there. That's mine.
Well, she lives in Joplin, Missouri. That's the one thing she doesn't like. It's a tough commute.
Cape Girardeau.
How that worked out. Yeah. All right.
How's the couch in the newsroom? Is it comfy?
Oh, yes. Now, if you could actually sleep in the newsroom, there's always people talking in the newsroom. You can't sleep in the newsroom.
That's why they call it a newsroom.
Yeah.
See, when Judy was here, she didn't let anybody sleep on that couch. She'd chew you away.
I don't think you could even sit on it. She's the one who put the couch there. Like, we need a very fancy couch in the newsroom, but nobody sit on it. It's like
very
the fancy
protective
room when you grow up as a kid. You're never allowed to play in that room.
Mm-hmm. Judy had a spray bottle, like with a cat, if you got like on the couch.
Get away!
Get out! Except she filled
like
it
nail
with,
you between
with
the eyes.
Ajax, which was, I thought, a little cruel.
Too much.
I got you to move, though. Anyway, the point I'm trying to make is that we now have, I feel better about the winter than I used to. Like, when I was a kid, it scared me because I always knew I was going to die in the snow somehow.
Uh-huh.
Now I have the proper amount of technology to be able to go, I could go live out in the snow. Pam, I think that might be an option for you. That you get this new technology. It's very light. It's very thin. I mean, there's people walking around. You're watching these people. They're walking around in a coat here. And this is about as bad. This is kind of, it can get a little worse, but not much worse than what we're seeing right now in Chicago weather-wise, right? The snow and cold and
some mix of
near zero.
The wet and the cold, right?
Yeah, it's bad. This is about as bad as it gets. And there's hipsters walking around here with their short haircuts and tiny little, waistcut, like super thin jackets.
What's up with the pea coats? Really? Not for this kind of weather.
But now they've got the thermal thing. Some of these things have like a thermal lining that reflects your own body heat, and then you never get you never get cold. I don't know.
And now you're not even a real TV reporter if you don't have a Canada Goose jacket. Because that's like the big rage now, you know, is Canada Goose Whatever. Jacket. Every single TV
oh,
reporter
don't be
has
knocking
one.
It. It
I'm not
is
knocking
so
them.
Warm.
They look warm,
they
but
look
it's like $1,500
I just can't
for
afford
these
it.
Coats.
But I understand there's some hot ones going around right now.
People are getting really beat sad. Up and like
right?
stealing
yeah,
their
that
jackets.
Crew going around. That's yeah. ridiculous.
Do they still work if they're the fakes? Or is it.
They did
mean?
Get a fake at one point. Mm. One of them got a fake.
That's always the worst.
You have yeah. to wait in line to get into Canada Goose because they're so worried about people coming in to do a smash and grab that they only allow a few people in the store at a time.
Wow.
How about that? They're so popular.
Are they heavy, though?
They're heavy, but you yeah. know, if you run in there with four people and grab coats and run out.
I'm going to tell you, I would like to just tell you that my Patagonia two-piece mm-hmm. is super light, and it works. It worked unbelievably. It's got the interior little thin... you know, puffy coat.
Yeah.
And then the big outer, like, shell. I feel like Dick Butkus in 1972 on the sidelines. Like, you can put it over your shoulders, and you got the little hood that goes over right. it, and I got nothing but mud, and I taped my hands. I love it.
Well, thankfully, you got rid of the big white one that kind of made you look like a marshmallow moving down the street. Remember that one?
Yes, I do recall that one.
I like that one.
It was very
retired
that.
You could turn into a Packer fan. We can get you a hunting suit.
I got to go. All right, let's find out from Kim, other than that, what's going on in the newsroom for the top of the hour.
A manhunt still underway after a deadly shooting at the Orland Square Mall.
And traffic being brought to you by TSA PreCheck. Brokaw Show with Anna DeVlantis
yes.
right here on 720 WGN. All right, are we going to see a super special,
mm-hmm.
totally different, State of the Union? Remember when the Grammys redid itself about 15 years ago?
Yeah.
And made itself into a music show as
I
opposed to?
It.
It's the best award show
it
on
is.
Now.
It is.
Because who cares who wins the award? The only people who won the award care they won the award. Everything
it's
else was
the best
performance.
Concert yeah. on the planet. And they all bring it because they're trying to impress each other as well, not just the fans.
Right. Right. And Taylor Swift sits in the front row like Jack Nicholson and sings along. I think it's great. Anyway, that's what we're going to do now with the State of the Union address after this mm-hmm. kerfuffle on Capitol Hill. And Andy Field is joining us from ABC News. And the White House says they're going ahead with alternative plans because they got turned down on a walkthrough. The whole thing is gigantic political stumpery, I think, by everybody here. But I think that Nancy Pelosi made a mistake not letting this thing go on as it is. But that's just me. Let's talk about where they're going to go. What are the options here, Andy?
Well, Taylor Swift sitting in the front row sounds good.
That's, yes,
I think
it would.
The president would like to get her.
All right. So where are we going here?
We don't know. We have at this point, you know, we every week I have said this pretty much everyone I talk to, we're in uncharted territory. We've never had a week before State of the Union where we don't know where the president's going to give it. Nancy Pelosi has asked the president to reconsider and delay it until the shutdown is over. At first she cited security concerns, although Homeland Security and Secret Service said that's not a problem. And now she's saying, look, it's just inappropriate. We can't be getting up and giving a big rah-rah, everything's great in the country, when indeed a quarter of the workforce has been furloughed for more than a month. The Senate, some senators have said, Mr. President, come on over here. You can do it over here if you'd like. Much smaller chamber, but it's possible. Or the president could go and do one of his rallies that he loves to do, the campaign-style rallies, and do it there. Although the whole point of the State of the Union is to basically outline his agenda to Congress and make his case, and doing it in front of a rally, I'm not quite sure would satisfy that.
Well, as long as he submits it in writing, technically that's all he's supposed to do, and that's what they do every year. They submit it in writing, but then he reads it to... the, you know, assembled the president, whomever he was or he or she could be, is just, they're only required to give a plan from the executive branch to the legislative branch. And now it's become this theatrics in the 20th century became theatrics because of the advent of film and television. So they could get it on radio.
Well, Ronald Reagan actually perfected it by bringing guests to the gallery and pointing out,
right.
here's something I want to do, and here's someone who's a victim of that, and he'd get up and everyone would applaud, and it became stagecraft, and it became very effective stagecraft. But a lot of people don't remember that before Woodrow Wilson, most people just kind of scribbled this thing on a paper and sent it up to Congress, and they were done with it.
Yeah.
What are the other options? You said a rally. I don't know if that's serious or not, or that just seems like something the president might choose. Are there other, I mean, has anything else come up in terms of where it might be if it's not there?
No, I mean, that is what we're hearing from folks inside the White House, that the president may indeed do that. Listen, the president doesn't like making antiseptic speeches. He's not particularly good at it. We've seen a few from the Oval Office when he has to give speeches off a prompter. He really thrives on an audience feedback, and I think he's most comfortable in that situation, and that may indeed be what we see if the House Speaker basically says, Mr. President, sorry, you're not welcome up here.
All right. Andy Field, thank you very much. ABC News.
Thanks, Andy.
Thanks, Andy.
Thanks, guys.
All right. I would like to see it at Mar-a-Lago.
Just for the fun of it, you mean?
And
think of the promotional opportunities.
Yes, I think he always does.
I think so.
Maybe Vlad will have him come over and do it at the Kremlin. That seems that uh-huh. He could do that as well. Oh, too soon? All right, fine. Too soon. Oh man, I don't know. You should just go. He should. You should take over the House of Representatives, and we could have a constitutional crisis right here and right now. You want one? You got one. That's what's going to happen. All right. I gotta get ready.
Yeah.
We all have to get ready for Kim Gordon, who's standing by in the Northwestern Medicine newsroom, and she's going to hold forth with the news coming your way in 2 minutes. Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis on yes. 720 WGN. All right, now here's Tom Skilling. You just heard him in what sounded like it was live, but it was recorded weather forecast. And now here he is live with us. And I must ask you this, Tom Skilling.
Yes, Ro.
On Saturday, I was looking at my National Weather Service, and we love the National Weather Service office here. They are amazing. I know that they look up to you. This is a very symbiotic relationship between you, the king of Chicago weather, and the crown princes of Chicago weather.
They are. They do a great job.
They really do. And I saw a push notification from them, and I'm just wondering, because if they're not getting paychecks, if they're drinking over there or what they're doing, or they got the interns coming up with words, because on Saturday they referred to something as violent freezing water in the air or something like that. I can't remember the exact words, but it was something I'd never, as a weather, you know, I'm a weather geek too.
I know you are.
Never heard whatever they were talking about. It was like freezing gas or something, freezing air, freezing. They used a term. We should get somebody on the blower from the National Weather Service to pull that up. I've been looking for it again. I was looking at all my push notifications and I couldn't find it. Yeah. And it's like I'm freaked by the idea of it. That there was freezing spray.
Freezing spray.
What is freezing spray?
Well, if you see these incredible ice formations up and down the lakeshore, that's what it is. You know, the waves smash up against the breakwaters and the shoreline. Water goes airborne, and then it lands on the cold surfaces and produces ice. And it's really quite fascinating to look at what results.
So you have to be near the lake for that to happen.
You do. Okay. It's a marine phenomenon.
All right. I was near the lake, so that's it geolocated me.
See, Ro, if you lived up in Alaska, you'd hear that all the time. They have the forecasts out for the Gulf of Alaska and the Bering Sea. You know, they talk about freezing spray all the time. In fact, during crabbing season up there, I was in the office in Anchorage one time, and they said, you know what you ought to cover are the crabbers out there.
Yeah.
Because they go out in December and January, and this freezing spray collects on the boats. And if they don't keep changing position, the ice collects on one side, and it can capsize the boat, the weight of it. So it's a serious phenomenon. You know, it really is.
Crabbing season. That's what I used to call spring break.
Hey,
Tom Skilling is brought to us by PermaSeal Basement Systems.
Is it called freezing spray what we see over Lakeshore Drive?
Yes.
Have we seen that?
Yeah. If it blows in the winds, and it does at times, that would be reached Lakeshore Drive in some extents. Yeah. Wow. But, the setup tonight, that's like an encyclopedic forecast here. We've essentially got the area divided into three zones. Snow up north, a mix in the city, and then down south, a transition to rain with time as temperatures rise. But this ground is so cold that I was walking in from the car. Our parking lot, which has been treated out there here on the northwest side, is like a skating rink. I can only imagine what some of these less traveled thoroughfares are like this afternoon. This is really dangerous.
It's something to watch out for sure.
It really is. If you're walking on a sidewalk or a driveway that hasn't been treated, you're going to do fine in all the major thoroughfares because Streets and Sand have been out there working hard, and they've got them all coated with chemicals. So there's no problem there, but it's these side roads that worry me.
Did you know, are you aware of this? I was told this, and of course, the good journalist that I am, I never confirmed it.
Yeah.
But
why bother?
Right, exactly. Well,
BuzzFeed
now,
didn't.
Yeah.
Well, we all know it's all fake news anyway.
Yeah, that's probably
told,
true.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, that's what they say.
It's not. But
the
yeah.
the IDOT had been treating, like over the summer, they treated overpasses and exit ramps specifically.
How interesting!
With a new product that made it. The freezing harder to accomplish for the weather.
Yeah,
right. So to keep them a little bit safer.
Well, that's good news. Well, you know, we started in those blizzards of the snowstorms of the 70s. The folks decided to put calcium chloride in because that lowers the temperature at which these chemicals will melt snow and ice on the road
down to the 20s. Right.
Yeah, exactly. And even the teens, you get kind of a slushy consistency to the snow then. But do you remember those snowstorms back in the 70s? That was...
Oh, yes.
It was terrible. It would snow, and then the traffic heat would turn the snow on the intersections to water, which would immediately freeze in the sub-zero air masses that followed the storms. And, you know, our intersections were like skating rinks, and it wasn't because anybody... Yeah, you know, folks hadn't spread the chemicals. Our crews had worked hard, but that's when they decided to put calcium chloride in because that adds a little extra melting boost to it.
It was as I seem to recall, and I was just in high school when all this was happening, but I seem to recall that some of those crews were not working quite as hard as they should have been because now they have GPS tracking. The way that we remove snow in the city of Chicago and we clear the roads
in
the city of Chicago and in the state of Illinois for IDOT is amazing.
It is amazing.
You know what? I've been up to Anchorage, Alaska, where they get about 70 inches of snow versus our 35. And there's no comparison. Our roads are cleaned much more efficiently down here. But, you know, having said all that, you're still going to hit some off-ramps and so forth that might be a little icy.
Yeah, be very careful. All right, let's talk about it tonight, love.
Yeah.
Because this, when Kim Gordon received your email, she took to her bed. She had the vapors.
I know.
She's pretty freaked out.
It's the longest forecast as I've ever seen you write, Tom.
I know. Yeah. You know, I've been sitting here struggling with this and trying to make this as concise as possible.
So let's go through it because there's a lot of people who are going to be affected by this, we don't want anybody to get hurt tonight.
That's right. We start the evening with the whole area exposed to freezing rain, which has coated many areas, even in the south suburbs where it will eventually go over to rain tonight, with ice. So, you know, it's not a thick coating, but it's enough to do the trick. You don't need a lot to create problems.
Right.
The temperatures will rise through the first half of the night, so I suspect in the city we'll be in the mid-30s, and we may only fall back to 33 by morning. But the thinking is it will snow predominantly through Lake and McHenry, Boone and Winnebago, northern DeKalb, northern King counties. Those areas are going to get primarily snow, and there could be local 3 to 6 inch accumulations there. So you come down into the city, we're going to have this freezing rain that will mix at times with some snow as the night goes on. But it looks like by tomorrow morning, the rain-snow line will shift into the city. So at least the north half or two-thirds of the city may be transitioning over to snow. And we could get 1 to 3 inches before this all ends around midday. And by the way,
will there be an ice pack under the snow?
Yeah, there will.
Now that's bad. Right?
But the temps will have gone up some. And the only problem is the ground doesn't warm as fast as the air does. So I imagine you've got to still be careful for some icy patches. The Weather Service is elected to pull down the winter storm warning at midnight, but I suspect there'll be some additional advisories that come up as we watch the situation unfold and see exactly how fast this melting occurs. And if you're down south, it'll go over primarily to rain, and there'll be very little snow accumulation. You may in the tail end of this thing later tomorrow morning at some point, later in the morning, early afternoon, before it all ends, go over to flurries, but there'll be a dusting or less down south. And in the city, the best guess now is there could be as much as 1 to 3 inches over the north end of the city. And that will taper off as you go south in the city, so there'll be less down south.
All right. So, and then this gets out of the way, and then it gets super cold.
Oh, right? This cold coming down is, reminiscent of some of the harsher cold air masses. We've got two of them in sight. One hits Thursday afternoon and night and into Friday and Saturday. Then it moderates some. It could snow from time to time Sunday and Monday. But Monday afternoon and to Monday night, the second one comes down. These are all lobes of the polar vortex. And so we'll have single-digit highs, maybe only up to 2, 3, 4 degrees on Friday with wind chills of 20 to 30 below. I mean, this is really dangerous stuff. And only about 7 above on Saturday. And then we bounce back to the 20s on Sunday and Monday and fall off Monday later in the day to another session of single-digit highs.
So we're in that cycle of super cold and snow. When it warms up, it gets snowy, and then super cold, snowy. We had this in 2013-14, and that's sort of the hallmark of a tough winter. Now, before we get all sad, and I'm just talking to myself right now, Tom, before I get all sad about this, the first half, I was lauding the first half of the winter. The first 45 days of this period were very, very,
very mild.
Yeah.
Unusually so. December was nearly 6 above normal. The first half of January was 7 degrees above normal. That's extraordinarily warm.
So if we get through this here the next couple of weeks, we're already, today is the day where the mean temperature of Chicago starts to go up.
Yes.
Right? So we're...
And the days are ever so slowly. On Sunday, we have our first 5 o'clock or later sunset. And from that point forward, all the sunsets will be after 5 o'clock.
That's the positivity we were looking for.
Yeah, that's a big nice. See, now that's just like the beginning of the recovery right there.
Yeah.
That's like when you get to the 5 o'clock, you're like, okay, now we're like the rest of the world.
Well, you know what else is interesting, too? If you look out, beyond 2 weeks, the indication, we're getting hints that the core of this cold air mass will shift westward in the continent. And if that's so, then our upper winds, instead of blowing in from the North Pole as they will on Friday and Saturday and next week, they'll be turning more westerly. And that taps maritime air, the Pacific air, starts blowing it in. And every now and then you get a little Gulf air. So we'll at least break up the cold spells and maybe even go into some above normal temperatures. So, I'd say at the beginning, this looks like an above normal winter. It is so far, far and away.
On average, right.
Yeah. And that you can superimpose some cold outbreaks and snowstorms on a warm winter. But that by and large, when the stats are calculated at the end of the season, it'll be above normal. And I still think that may be the case, although we've got some really cold air coming in with this Friday thing. And the interesting thing is it's the coldest air in the whole world relative to normal.
What?
That didn't sound good.
In other words, we're the only... The number of degrees that will be below normal will be greater here in the Midwest and eastern North America than anywhere else in the world. They're melting roads in heat in Australia. And much of eastern Asia is running way above normal, as is, most other areas on the planet. So this is kind of an anomalous pool of cold air we're in.
While you were gone, so many things happened in the news while you were gone. I'm like, oh, my God, I wish I could talk to Tom about this.
We missed you, Tom.
Did you see that the North Pole moved?
Yeah. Isn't that something? This is a magnetic thing that's going on, and it's been drifting since 1900 over to more and more towards Siberia. And
again, this is Putin. He's winning everything now.
Well, they think it has to do with what they call a storm down on the core of the... We have molten lava in the middle of the Earth. And this drives the magnetic field to some extent on top. So they think there's something going on subsurface. Now, this is in the realm of geology. But the magnetic North Pole is changing location and has been for a while.
Wow. So does this have anything to do with how our magnetic field is supposed to flip? Like,
you know, I that would be interesting to talk to a geologist about. Yeah. I don't purport expertise in this,
I
but
think you're an expert in everything.
No, I tell you, this gets a little out of my area of expertise, but it's still fascinating. And you know, when you bring out a compass, you know, the needle goes to the north. The fact is that where the needle's been going has been changing slowly with time,
yeah.
And this becomes important to navigation. And
oh
so
yeah,
forth.
It's totally screwed up my navigation. I can tell you that. Right now, that and the winds. I don't know.
What,
you know, because I set a sail every day for where I'm going.
Mm-hmm.
You
yeah.
know, and it's not working for me. All right, well, Tom, this is a serious situation. The worst of travel is going to be when?
Yeah, the first half of the night,
first half of tonight.
But
tonight.
Then you've got snow after that. If you go north, you're gonna have to deal with all that snow. So
get where you're going.
Yeah,
is the point.
It's just a kind of an ugly. This will all be winding down late morning or early afternoon tomorrow, and
that
then
does
we
not
turn
help
to
me.
The. Barbaric cold. That's
oh, good.
Barbaric cold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Winter is coming.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Tom.
See you, guys.
Thanks, Tom.
We'll see you on the TV coming
all
up
right.
in a few minutes. All right. Thank you. Tom Skilling, WGN TV. Let's check in now. Kim Gordon, WGN Radio.
Roe Alderman Bob Fioretti has a buddy helping out his campaign for mayor.
Then there's this. Watch for Chicago's very own stories with Micah and Joe. Micah Mater, Joe Donlin, weeknights on WGN TV News at 9 o'clock.
It's our boy. He hasn't called us in about 6 months,
yeah.
But he's our boy.
You and Kev, you were once besties with Joe.
Yep.
Missed that guy.
Oh, coming up on the program, Mr. Richard Roper is here. He's going to tell us who the hell is Roma and why did she get all of these Oscar nominations?
And I need to see it.
How crazy is this? A movie nobody ever heard of is sweeping the Oscars.
Absolutely. I got to go see it.
Also, The Favourite, if you, it's spelled the British way.
Mm-hmm. Favour.
And Black Panther. And a pretty good, okay. You know, for me, A Star is Born is the most important film ever made. And it was an okay day for A Star is Born and the Oscar nominations. So, we'll talk about all that with Richard.
Yeah. No.
Not a great day.
The Bradley Cooper got snubbed.
Yeah. He's getting snubbed a lot in this. And I thought he, I mean, you just saw it.
Oh, I just loved it. Oh,
yeah.
It moved me.
Yes.
I cried.
It's great. There's a lot of ugly crying in it.
There is.
And Emily Blunt got blunted by the, that was bad. Because she's, you know, she's Mary Poppins. And everybody wins from Mary Poppins. It's a law that if you play Mary Poppins, you have to win an Oscar.
But Black Panther, a superhero movie getting nominated, is causing quite the stir.
Yep.
Pretty big deal.
That's coming your way. We'll talk about all of that. But first, Kim Gordon's in the WGN newsroom, and she tells you what's going on right now. A Gila Mystique.
Tell me something, girl. Are you happy in this modern world? Or do you need more? Is there something else you're searching for? I'll fall in.
This is Bradley Cooper from A Star is Born.
Yeah.
In the first time I cried in the film.
Is it dusty in here? I think I'm crying right now.
Yeah. No big deal.
No.
I'm good.
Oh.
I'm fine.
Oh.
Richard Roper's here. Oh, God.
Thank God someone is moving.
Get together.
Get together
in my eyes. Pull it together. Pull it together.
All right. Now, Bradley Cooper, people are saying he got snubbed. He didn't get snubbed for this. As lead actor, he was nominated.
Yeah. Well, first
but
of all.
For director, he got snubbed.
Exactly. He was, Star is Born was nominated for Best Picture. He co-wrote the screenplay with Eric Roth, who's a great veteran screenwriter going all the way back to Forrest Gump. And it's an adapted screenplay nomination because, of course, A Star is Born is not original material. It's based right. on original material from almost, you know, 80 years ago. He's also one of the producers on the film. So Bradley Cooper could still win 3 Oscars. And this film could win, and Lady Gaga could win for Best Song. She's going to win for Best Song. The song's shallow, but she's the one who would actually win the Oscar. It was weird, though, that he wasn't nominated for Best Director because it's one of those things, well, did the film direct itself? How does everything else in it do so well? And it really was a well-directed film. In fact, I defy anybody to watch A Star is Born and Bohemian Rhapsody side by side and tell me the direction isn't far superior in A Star is Born, including the concert scenes. Whereas Bohemian Rhapsody, they were very standard. You know, here's the band, here's the crowd, here's the band, here's right. the crowd.
Video, like 80s video.
Exactly. And yeah. as you know, Star is Born was much more like you were seeing a classic documentary like
And
the
how
Last
they did
Waltz.
It. Yeah. They did it guerrilla style. They went to actual festivals. Yes. They put them up on stage and said, hey, people, go along with this for a moment. And it was great.
They did. And, you know, performed the music live as opposed to the members of, you know, the guys playing the members of Queen are lip syncing. Mm-hmm. Rami Malek's a great actor. He's not singing as Freddie Mercury. That's Freddie Mercury you're hearing in that movie.
Huh. Yeah.
With, you know, a few small little things where it's Rami Malek. So it is kind of weird that he wasn't nominated for Best Director.
So I would say that let's just go through the. We're going to make our Oscar picks right now.
You guys why are going to make your picks right now?
Sure, why not?
Yeah.
I'm not making mine right now. Okay. I'm holding mine, back.
Yours are much more important.
I'm going to try to influence yours right now.
I have to hold mine back because there are contests coming up where I can't give my picks away yet. So. But I'll look.
Right, so accordingly. The best actor thing here, you've got Christian Bale, which I said, I just saw the trailer for this movie, and then I said, you know, just send him the Oscar now because you think, because when you see him and you hear him in the scenes in which he's in the movie Vice, you think it's actually Dick Cheney playing Dick Cheney. He's that good at being Dick Cheney. The movie, however, kind of sucks. And it's got its own series of problems. I mean, it's like I'm ready. I really like I like McKay. I like the whole. I like all the stuff the guy's done going back to Anchorman, mm-hmm. and I like what he's trying to do as a filmmaker. But I think he got so over the top political because they're trying to make a comedy out of something that really wasn't. That I don't think it's too soon. I can't believe I'm even saying that. And the way they do it is too soon. And especially in the aftermath of everything that we see now that goes on in Washington, I wish for the days of George W. Bush like there's no tomorrow. Because there may not be.
Well, I disagree. I liked what they did with it. I think if you get too heavy-handed, and there's a ton of material out there about Dick Cheney and all of that. Like, thought certain devices, like the guy who narrates the movie, I guess we don't want to give it away, but the young actor Jesse Plemons, who people might remember from Breaking Bad and Friday Night Lights, I mean, there's a you know, something that comes about from his narration. I mean, so there are some heavy moments. But yeah, it's a polarizing film. A lot of critics hated Vice. They were wrong, along with Rokan.
Mm-hmm. That's fine. All right, but
the Bradley.
So who's
going
to win? You've gone through one actor so far.
I say Bradley Cooper because people are going to feel sorry that he got snubbed in the director category. So and plus he was amazing in the movie.
Yeah, you're right, Anna. Because Bradley Cooper hasn't had any breaks in life. It's time for the kid to get a break.
Bradley Cooper, give him a little love.
The winner here is Viggo Mortensen. For Green Book. Yep, that is the winner.
Yeah. You know, the good thing about it, this and a lot of other races, you could make a case for all five nominees winning. It's not cut and dried like it's been some years.
Actor in a supporting role, you've got Mahershala Ali again. Now, this could be his second Oscar in a row. Mm-hmm. Adam Driver for Black Klansman. Sam Elliott for A Star is Born, who was fantastic in
unbelievable.
That movie.
Well, thank you for that role. I appreciate it.
Richard E. Grant for Can You Ever Forgive Me? And Sam Rockwell for Vice. And Sam Rockwell won last year.
Yeah, for Three Billboards, remember?
Yeah. Mm.
So I would say this is this comes down to Adam Driver and Sam Elliott for me. Hmm. Because I think that Adam Driver was great. Black Klansman was a great movie. Mm-hmm. And I got to give it to Sam Elliott because there's a body of work element that always goes in to the Academy here.
Yep.
Which still is, you know, older than the average voting block, even true. I think for the Republican primary. So it's like, I think Sam Elliott's going to get a body of work here.
I'm going to go Mahershala Ali.
Wow, two in a row.
It's because I like him very much.
Right? God love him. Was it two years ago or a year ago?
Mahershala Ali was 2 years ago, and Sam Rockwell was last year for Three Billboards.
Did they take that into consideration?
Yes.
Oh.
Definitely. Like, somebody just won. Although, you know, sometimes you get something like Tom Hanks won back-to-back for Philadelphia and Forrest Gump, so it happens sometimes where it's just two great performances in a row.
So, actress in a leading role, Yalitza Aparicio for Roma. We're going to talk about that in just a second. Mm-hmm. Glenn Close for The Wife. Olivia Colman for The Favorite. Lady Gaga. For The Stars for Stars Born, and Melissa McCarthy.
I know.
Can You Ever Forgive
Me?
I was trying to remember what you said about Can You Ever Forgive Me? What did you say about
that? That's the one where she was based on the real life story of the writer who was on Down on Her Luck and started forging letters from more famous dead celebrities.
I
she was great in it. She's great in it, you know, and she's a wonderful actress, Plainfield's own. You know, it's interesting because she used to be known as Jenny McCarthy's cousin. Jenny's now known as Melissa McCarthy's cousin.
That's right, and she's all known for her comedy, and this is
Yeah, Bridesmaids, she was nominated. So now, you know, it's a matter of time. She is going to win an Academy Award at some point.
Not this year. I'm with Lady Gaga on that one.
The Gogs?
Actress in a supporting role, you got Amy Adams in Vice. Marina de Tavira in Roma.
No one knows the names of any of these people.
Well, it's Roma.
Roma came out of nowhere for me.
Okay, we'll explain what Roma is and why it's important here in just a second. Regina King for If Beale Street Could Talk, Emma Stone for The Favorite, and Rachel Weisz for The Favorite, which is interesting because they put them both in supporting roles for that movie. Mm-hmm. Right, but they're the movie surrounds them. Right?
Well, Olivia Colman's nominated for Best Actress for The Favorite. All three of them you could put in either category. You know, and that's the thing. The studios can decide to just nominate anybody in any category. Right. There's no strict rules there.
So I think what you're going to end up with here is I think Vice is going to get skunked. And I think that you're going to end up with Roma either having the most amazing night in the history of the Oscars for a movie no one's ever heard of. But they will by then, because it's on Netflix, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can go home and watch Roma right now.
Right.
And
I'm
nominated for every single category, essentially.
Currently playing in 12 theaters in Poland, 6 theaters in Israel, and going to be re-released in Brazil if you want to see it on the big screen.
Do they talk American in it? What happens movie?
It's a film set in Mexico, and as such, most of the people there, you read the subtitles. It tells you what they're saying. You can play along. And it is a Netflix original film. What Netflix did, though, is they released it in theaters last December, so it's eligible for Academy Award a week before it was then put on Netflix. So this is the first Oscar nomination for a Netflix original film. It will not be the last.
It shows the respect of the Academy, right, for Netflix produced.
Yeah, well, they're, you know, the fact that, you know, it's a beautiful looking film. It will stay with you for a long time. Yeah, I gave it 4 stars. I mean, anybody who sees it, look, it's tough. It's tough to get people to watch black and white films with subtitles. There's no doubt about that. A lot of people feel like you're being made to eat your vegetables. To me, it's like it's beautiful to look at. I understand. It also moves at a very deliberate pace. Some people say nothing happens in it, and it's like, well, a lot happens, but not in the way a superhero movie has things happening.
Right.
Regina King wins for actress in a supporting role.
She's my pick.
She's great.
Yeah. All right. Animated feature film, Incredibles 2, Isle of Dogs, Mirai, Ralph Breaks the Internet, and Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. I'm going to go with Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
And I picked Ralph Breaks the Internet.
I love both of those films.
I remember you talking to us about that.
That's a fun one.
Best cinematography, and really, who cares? This is where you get up and go to the bathroom. Cold War,
Roma,
the favorite, Never Look Away. Roma, you said, is black and white, right?
Mm-hmm.
And A Star is Born, probably because it's a black and white film.
It doesn't get it?
The cinematographers, because the cinematographers vote for this.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Isn't this by...
Well, everybody nominates their own profession, and then the whole Academy votes from these five candidates. So, in other words, cinematographers nominated cinematographers.
Okay.
The Academy's smart enough to know, especially when it comes to things like film editing and sound mixing, you can't have all the idiots in the Academy voting on that. You got it. So, because the sound mixer will know good sound mixing, right?
Yeah, right.
But there's about 7,000 members of the Academy. They all get to vote in all the categories now, and a lot of them, you know, in some cases, studio heads will say to their secretaries or their executive assistants, who should I take for documentary short subject? You watched those, didn't you?
Yeah, way to commit.
I'm going to Roma, exactly. Too. All right, so costume design. Now, this is always an interesting one because if you're a betting person, not it's interesting to watch because I like how they bring out. Remember, there was one year where they showed us all the costumes.
Yes,
and
I do
you're like,
that.
And they're like, I don't want right. to see the costume.
It was,
like,
it was too much.
Yeah, it was like going to a department store. There are mannequins and everything. Yeah, that was. Oh my God, that you're right.
Right.
We're gonna see how they make the makeup.
Yeah.
Let's watch Dick Cheney. You know, Patrick. Let's watch.
Well, they do. They
Christian Bale become Dick Cheney.
They sometimes show that, like in Fast Movie. I mean, they've done that in the past. I mean, this is the part again where it's the middle of the show where you're like you
can probably cut that part.
You walk away from the party and you step back up and you go to get the cheese dip. Now, Ballad of Buster Scruggs, never heard of it. Black Panther, The Favorite, Mary Poppins Returns, and Mary Queen of Scots. I think the two Marys lock each other out. Black Panther, interesting. I mean, it's just a bunch of tight fitting leather stuff. I mean, I don't know. Is that great? The Favorite has got all the frilly stuff in it. I think that's going to be the one that wins.
I think Black Panther wins.
They all, I will say Anna makes, I would agree with Anna's pick. But they always love the period piece costume dramas. I put it to you that in Black Panther, which actually has all kinds of different, you know, because there's generals and there's different factions and everything, you have to create original costumes because there's no Wakandan history books. To me, it's like The Favorite. Yeah, they're really good, but all you do is go like, all right, the year's 1817. What were they wearing then? All right, let's make that. I mean, how it's not that hard to recreate a specific era. It's a lot harder for me to create a new world.
But they do like the British period.
They love them.
There's going to be a very, very controversial winner here.
Ooh.
Coming up, I will tell you about on the other side of Kim Gordon telling us what's happening in the news right now.
Roe, a judge clamps down harder on R. Kelly.
Coming up, the stories that matter from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom with Kim Gordon at 5 o'clock. Right now, Richard Roper is here. We're doing our Oscar picks. Richard's not doing his Oscar picks because people pay him for that.
I thought we were doing these in a month. I was taken by surprise. I thought we were going to talk about the nominations, so I'm just going along with you guys.
I'm just going to go with this right now. I mean, because I'm just telling you who's going to win, then you're telling me I'm wrong. I think that's
I'm not saying anything
inverted
about
way of going here. The Best Director is very interesting this year because as much as Bradley Cooper got skunked on this, you know, as you pointed out, the film got nominated in a bunch of other places. But this has Black Klansman, which is Spike Lee, right? Cold War, The Favorite, Roma, which is Cuarón, who's this, you know, considered one of the great directors in the world right now.
Yes.
And Vice, Adam McKay, who's a Chicago-related guy. I think it's Spike Lee's year. I think finally it's Spike Lee's year.
I think
because
that too.
It's going to be body of work. Black Klansman was excellent. And it's and also another little tip. We'll put all these on the interwebs, and then I'll take on Richard Roper, man to man, right here. But I think that one of the things that you're going to see that also win for just a little little deal here is the original score, because Spike Lee always has amazing scores for his films. The stuff that's just going on in the background that takes you through the movie. Oh my God, is it great in this movie?
It's often like very reminiscent of like films from the 50s and 60s. And he does that on purpose to give them more, you know, weight. I will say you make some great points about Best Director. Cold War, by the way, for people who haven't seen it, that's a Polish film. So once again, they're speaking in Polish. But it's a great film. And then you mentioned, you know, Alfonso Cuarón, who has an Oscar. I think Adam McKay with Vice, it is a little bit too lightweight. So the amazing thing to me is, I do agree, I will say in this case, I think it might be Spike Lee's year. The amazing thing is he had never been nominated for any of the films he directed ever until now, which is insane when you think about the film. He was never nominated for directing Do the Right Thing, Jungle Fever, 25th Hour. This is his first directing nomination.
More on this to come from Richard Roper.
Yes.
Watch this space, read him in the paper, and also just follow him. Follow him everywhere. Read him in the Sun-Times and then follow him on the internet, and you're going to find out who's going to win all these Oscars because he always gets this right and I never get it wrong. All right. I mean, wait, I always get it wrong. With Anna DeBlantis right here, 720 WGN. Coming up at 6 o'clock, Bill Daly is going to be with us.
Yeah, he made some news today. He wants to slash the number of aldermen in half, and he made a big proposal unveiling it about how he intends to do that.
We'll talk to him about that in 1 hour from now. And he was out with Howard Dean today.
Was he shouting?
He brought Howard Dean to Chicago, the former head of the Democratic Party, and he ran for president, and he made a fool out of himself in New Hampshire. Remember that?
Well,
who can forget that speech?
Still a likable guy.
And run to Colorado! Okay. Yeah, we got Howard.
That's all it took for Howard.
Yeah, relax. He never got over it either.
No.
That was the thing. It was never the same. And it was like 20 years ago.
Isn't that crazy? You think about that.
That's the most amazing thing.
Defining moment for him.
Like 18 years ago. It was like, and yet he'll never be seen the same way again. He'll be seen as a crazy ranting man. And now the funny thing is, now look at where we are in politics. Know. Everybody's a crazy ranting man.
It's almost like you have to rant.
Yeah.
It'd be crazy.
Right. Back then, who knew that that was the key to success? That's what made all those people who got washed out by something stupid that happened,
mm-hmm.
right? Like Gary Hart's thinking, what? I didn't even hit. The woman's still denying we ever had sex.
I know.
I mean, we might have had sex, but
she sat on my lap for a picture, and that sunk him.
Right. Guy wore a funny helmet once. That was bad. Kept him from being president. Another guy got a snowflake on his cheek, and he's always crying. Oh, look at him. I mean, it's like that, and now. All right. I'm sorry. Too much.
It's okay.
Let's move on. You know what it's time for, don't you?
We do.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, three, two, one.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
All right, checking in at
number five.
32 days into the partial government shutdown, and still neither side is budging. Senate Republicans have backed President Trump's proposal for 3 years in DACA protections in exchange for $5.7 billion in border wall funding as part of a multi-billion dollar package for border security total.
Mm-hmm.
And on the floor today, Mitch McConnell called the president's offer comprehensive.
Is there a plan truly to throw federal workers, DACA recipients, Customs and Border Patrol, and indeed all Americans under the bus just to extend this run of political theater so they can look like champions of the so-called resistance? To reject this proposal, Democrats would have to prioritize political combat with the president ahead of federal workers, ahead of DACA recipients, ahead of border security, and ahead of stable and predictable government funding.
Now, there was a baby crying in the background there. Was that a senator or a baby? What was that?
There's a lot of whining going on.
Who was that back there?
They have dueling bills now before the Senate, scheduled to vote Thursday afternoon. One of them would include that $5.7 billion. The other would just open up government while they discuss the issues. Neither of them guaranteed to get the 60 votes needed to pass.
Here is Chuck Schumer calling McConnell's criticism futile.
The American people know that President Trump is responsible for the shutdown, and now they have learned that Leader McConnell is a co-conspirator in the shutdown. You can't have a compromise when one side is determining not only what they want in the bill, but what we want in the bill without even seriously negotiating with us. That is not how negotiating works. That's not the art of the deal.
Oh, okay. Boy.
All right. Got nowhere. It should be simple. How about this? How about $3 billion for his wall?
You should get in there.
$3 billion for the wall. I can
throw
get this
bone.
Done. And you make permanent the DACA piece, and you get $3 billion. That's what I'd go
that
back with that.
Reasonable.
I'd go back with permanent DACA and the $3 billion, and then he comes back and goes, no, my base will kill me. I need $5 billion. And you give him $5 billion in permanent on the DACA, and we just move along. Because you know what? You could probably use another couple hundred miles of wall. And that's fine. I mean, I don't know if we need it or not, but you can do it. He gets to go, Bill DeWall, look at that. I never said from sea to shining sea, and I never said that I did not collude with the Russians. I think you can give him the wall because I don't think he's going to get reelected, no matter under any circumstance, because people are fatiguing of the whole deal. Right?
Well,
even Republicans.
People thought he wasn't going to get elected the first time, so.
Yeah. But he was running against Hillary Clinton the first time. It was it was never going to work.
Yeah.
It was. I mean, that was. And I think it's totally different. We've seen 4 years of this. The promises he can say to his base is, but his base is not enough to get him elected. It's just not enough. He's got to. It's 57. It's literally 57-43 right now in terms of where likely voters would go, and that's just not going to be enough for him. because people are just tired of the theatrics of it and the wackiness, and that, and there's just enough smoke around Russia. And believe me, by the time the Mueller thing comes out, and it will, it's, you're going to see that that he really was, he, they've, his own lawyer admitted that he was, he was negotiating. He thought there was the potential. Let's put it this way. He thought there was the potential of a Trump Tower Moscow if he lost. So that was, it was, so all the nice things he said about Putin during, they now have a context. Like, I got to suck up to him because I'm going to get a tower there anyway.
Rudy Giuliani drinking the truth serum before his recent cable news appearances.
That's his lawyer saying that. So I don't think we have to worry about that, but here we go.
Number four.
All right, Kentucky Catholic School, whose students were at the center of this viral standoff with the Native American elder that we talked to yesterday,
Nathan Phillips.
Until they have been closed. They were closed today and are closed technically until further notice due to safety concerns. Church officials said that in a new video from two Covington Catholic High School students that they detail the threats that have been lodged against them.
Several media platforms blatantly lied about the events regarding the controversy in D.C., and it has affected us as a community and individuals greatly. There have been many threats against our lives, against our parents. Some of these threats include that we should all be locked in the school and it should be burnt to the ground, the school being bombed, school shooting threats. It's really scary. I know that a lot of people are scared to go to school tomorrow and won't be attending because of what could happen. There have been cops there ever since the incident, and I think there'll be a lot more tomorrow.
So they closed their school today. It's, I mean, I think things have gone a little too far. If they're getting death threats over this,
right?
A little too far. Let's just calm down,
well,
people.
Everybody, I mean, now on the internet, everybody gets a death threat because the internet's capable. It used to have
but
to
the
go.
The school felt enough of a threat that they chose to close
well,
it
they
down.
Do now.
They must have.
Oh, absolutely, because schools close down every day in this country because there's some verified threat because
gotta
one kid, you know, is seen on social media or somewhere else doing something. That happens almost every day in America. But this is a different situation. And of course, people, trolls, the whole thing, this is a really bad moment in America. And ultimately, the funny thing about this, I was thinking about this morning. We talked to Nathan Phillips yesterday, and you know, I don't think that the kids, I know they're saying we did nothing wrong, we just stood there. There was a lot of mocking of Nathan Phillips and the Native Americans who were there, who were like kind of caught in the middle of this. That really they had nothing to do with it other than marching through and trying to get between them and this crazy black racist group that was screaming at
it's
them.
The official hate group, black Hebrew Israelites.
Right.
There's this, all kinds of interviews with their leaders and participants about how they hate white people, gay people, Jews, Asians.
It's a bad group. That's a bad group. And these, you know, these kids are coming off of that, and then they start, it is mocking the Indians that are there, and the Native Americans are there making fun of the guy banging his drum and all that, and it's but ultimately, they were. It was peaceful at the end of the day with those kids. And there was, I think they both Mark Sandman, the kid, who was standing off against the Omaha tribal elder, I think they both thought they were there for the same reason. Right? I mean, those kids were there for a protest against abortion. That's how they were there in the first place.
Yeah.
Right. So they were there for a political moment, and that's what Nathan was there for too, for a political moment for the Indigenous People's Day. What are you going to do? I mean, that's okay. You know, to have that. That's what the mall is all about. That's what Washington and the public spaces in Washington are all about. Are expressing yourself. So that's where it all was. Kids still, I mean, acted like teenage kids, and they were goofy, and they probably shouldn't have said or done some of the things that they did. Take the other group out of it, the black
Hebrew
Israelites are just, you know, that's a whole other, that's a hate group, and that's a whole other deal.
Yeah.
But somehow they didn't get in that video.
Well, you heard them on the longer video. That was what came to light later in the day.
So, but I don't know how those two ended up just looking at each other. like that. That's a picture that will go down. That's a picture that will be taken out of context for the next 100 years.
It'll be used as a meme, and yeah. It'll be on social media and all kinds of those things.
And by Thursday, we'll have forgotten about it because there will be so many other things that will have happened between now and then. Let's check in with Kim and find out what's coming up in the news at the bottom of the hour.
Roe, the search for a teen who fell into Lake Michigan, the search has been hampered once again due to the weather.
When it comes to the weather, we all want to know, what did Skilling say? Watch for updated forecasts from Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling, weeknights on WGN-TV. Tom used the word barbaric in his forecast for this week, by the way. That's what Skilling said.
He did. Barbaric. As in barbarism. As in, it's going to be bad outside.
Yeah, really bad.
Yeah. This is exactly how the people from Westeros felt about the White Walkers coming across the wall.
It's coming.
Yeah. Whatever's coming in right now, it's ice and snow. That's never a good combination. All right, we continue on with the top five and five.
Number three.
John Kerry is in Davos, Switzerland for that big special rich guy summit that's going on.
All the rich guys are there.
So he was on a panel and they asked him, what would you say to Donald Trump if he were sitting across from you right now?
If you had President Trump sitting right opposite you, what would your message to him be?
I can't play that. But I know that, you see, because he doesn't take any of this seriously. He doesn't have an ability to have that kind of conversation.
So what would you say to him to get it, sir? What would your message be?
Resign.
No.
Did he also say, na, 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 I'm in Davos and you're not? With all the rich guys.
It's exactly your kind of place here, pal. Although the really rich guys like that, Donald Trump has never played in that area. He was always sort of like the hotelier to those guys. He was the guy that, you join Mar-a-Lago and you get a really nice golf club and golf course and all of that.
Sold him condos.
Right. But no one was ever going to call Donald Trump and ask him for financial advice. Right. I mean, that was never going to happen. That is true. And they all know it. And Trump knows it, too. I mean, you need a guy who, he lost his keister on the Taj Mahal. They're not exactly going to go, you're a genius, sir.
The U.S. appearance was Pompeo did a video tribute to the folks at Davos because, remember, nobody's participating from the U.S., from the White House because of the shutdown.
Taking this incredible sacrifice of not showing up at a rich people party in Davos, Switzerland. All right, we'll get over it.
Number two.
Jimmy Kimmel paid tribute to the halfway mark through Donald Trump's first term in a special episode of Jimmy Kimmel Live, Intermission Accomplished. Now, Alyssa Milano was part of it, and she did an infomercial for the Donald Trump commemorative plate.
Relive all the glory when our president triumphantly ascends the stairs of Air Force One with toilet paper on his shoe. Trump and Vladimir Putin's first kiss. Feel the president looking directly at the sun during a solar eclipse.
Love it.
And finally,
number one.
This is probably the biggest story of the year.
Yep.
Celebrity Big Brother.
Hands down.
Yes, has premiered. And you've got Tom Green, Joey Lawrence, Lolo Jones. Somehow, Kato Kaelin works his way into this. And then there's Anthony Scaramucci.
I was fighting with Steve Bannon and Reince Priebus to shoot at the OK Corral store. Priebus and Bannon did not want me in that job. So then they started making up stories. But I got my ego involved, right? And I'm a competitive guy. And so I trusted a reporter. I said something inappropriate to a reporter. I went after those two guys. He ran to CNN with it. And so when the new chief of staff came in, he fired me.
And who was that?
That was John Kelly.
Did Cato ask him the questions?
I don't think so, no.
It is. It was Cato.
Really?
Yeah.
Cato, is he the host of this thing?
No, he's just in the house, and Cato doesn't know.
Oh, they're just kind of kvetching.
And Cato's like, who did what? Who are those people? What are you talking about? I think they should do a Big Brother, White House edition, where it's just nothing but people that have left the White House, and they all have to sit there and tell their own stories.
A good group of them to pick from.
Yeah. That would be, there's tons of them.
Omarosa.
But she already
she
did
dished.
It. But now Ryan Lochte is on the show.
My name is Ryan Lochte. I've been to 4 Olympics, and I'm a 12-time Olympic medalist. Kudos to me. Right now, I'm training for 2020. It's one of my biggest goals is making 5 Olympics. My reputation. What can I say? It's not good, I guess. I mean, I was the party boy. Don't get me wrong. I can party with the best of them.
Oh.
I'll go toe-to-toe with anyone.
Didn't know that.
Wham!
Wham!
Oh, let's go hit the swells.
So cool.
Gnarly.
Gaga.
Wow.
Wow. Oh, man. Somehow, and you know, the Mooch is a regular on this program. Yeah. I like Anthony Scaramucci. I have an abiding, I don't respect that for anybody anymore.
He's very honest.
But I like him. I personally like him.
About his experience.
I have no, but Cato Kalin's been on the show a number of times. Mm-hmm. I've known Cato Kalin since the trial. That's 20-something years now. What is that? That's 23 years ago that whole thing ended. Almost 24 years.
Yeah. He's used to rooming with celebrities. Yeah. Why he's part of this.
And he's a nice guy. There's a moronic thing going on here. They found the stupidest people and they put them in a house together.
And they're doing pretty stupid things, too.
Yeah. I did that in college.
I know. It seems a lot like that.
All right. Well, there's more on there. You know what? This is going to be the gift that keeps on giving. It's on again tonight. We'll play more of it for you tomorrow. Right
Ryan
now.
Lochte.
Kim Gordon has the WGN News brought to you by Penny Mustard Furnishings. Hold on, Kim. I didn't close this thing up officially. Then you start.
The top 5 at 5.
Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis. Yes.
Yes, it is.
All right. A.B. Stoddard is going to join us. And, you know, every week we talk to the great A.B. Stoddard, who is I think to my eye and ear, one of the great sages of Washington, D.C. She's figured it all out. She's been doing it for longer than any of us wish to acknowledge because we've all been doing it longer than we all wish to acknowledge. But I will say this, that today, as I sit here on the 22nd of January,
yes,
entering the second half of the first term of Donald Trump, the first day of the rest of our lives, I find myself utterly confused and dismayed by everything I see in Washington. I would like to posit this to you. I've been saying this all day, and I'd like to get your thoughts on this because I respect your vision on this better than most, or pretty much all. I think that Nancy Pelosi made a total mistake by playing the State of the Union card. Your thoughts, A.B. Stoddard?
I actually don't. I know she talked about how it was a security issue, and then the DHS people pushed back and said, everything's going to be just fine. We can handle the security of an event like this. And it is the greatest security risk, you know, event that we hold. But I don't think there should be business as usual while the government shut down. And this is not an emergency. It's a political attack speech. There will be political attack rebuttals by the Democrats afterwards. It's just a waste of resources, and it's inappropriate when so many people are suffering. On the same note, I don't think that a CODEL to Europe, again, it is important to assure NATO commanders that our president of the United States, who's threatening to pull out of NATO, is still somewhat committed, and there are other leaders in our government in a co-equal branch that are committed to this alliance. But it wasn't an emergency trip, and Nancy Pelosi and the rest of the group can make that CODEL after the government's reopened. So I actually am pleased with the outcome. I'd like everything to be put on hold.
But you heard from the White House, they are definitely moving forward with it. Either they'll do it with Nancy Pelosi's approval, or they'll move it somewhere else outside of that area. It could be the Senate chamber, could be elsewhere. What do you think of that plan? Would that likely happen?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds likely. He's very attached to televised events. He had an Oval Office address on the border wall crisis. And it didn't do anything. He had an announcement on Saturday, and it didn't seem to do much. And he is going to really, you know, he's going to want to have this televised message. He probably wants a crowd. I don't think he'll do it in the Oval Office. And that's fine. And then he can submit it to the Congress in a letter. But I still don't think that the Democrats lost anything by having him have a rally instead of a State of the Union. He can't wait to have it until the government's open.
My theory on this is that as President of the United States, he's broken a lot of the traditions and the norms of the office of the presidency. Mm-hmm. Things we've gotten very used to, at least in our lifetimes. He's done that. Republicans have aided him in some of it. I'd say most of it. Democrats, by playing in and again allowing that to happen, in terms of the Democrats' brand of being not just a resistance but a spine for the U.S. government, which is, I think, should be their brand. Not, oh, we're just going to resist, because that's again polarizing. It just takes you to either side of the arena. If you can stand up and say, we're going to still maintain this structure because I know that's what people are counting on for government, I think it throws a bone. And she would have been far more powerful sitting in back of him while he's attacking her by name. I think it would have been far more powerful because he would have come off as a bully. To his base, great. But his base is not going to be enough to get him reelected. And the American people in the middle are the people who he's got to win over, and that does not win the argument.
So. I don't know. We'll see if independent voters were really upset that he didn't get to hold a State of the Union address in the House chamber on January 29th. I don't know that. Again, I mean, I'm really down on the whole idea of pretending that, you know, official events have to take place when all these people are out of work for day 32. At this point next week, it'll be, oh my gosh, almost 40 days, second missed pay period. And then as we've talked about, the spillover into all these communities where they're not federal co-workers, but their economies depend on the salaries of federal workers. And I just don't think that Donald Trump is going to look great or Pelosi is going to look bad or any. I'm against this stuff happening until we have a functioning government.
All right, so
it's a campaign rally. I mean, it's not a real policy or legislative act. It's a speech. Mm-hmm.
So the proposal today, Mitch McConnell puts a proposal out that basically says, you know, it's $5.7 billion. We've already kind of agreed to these things before. Let's just vote on it and move along. And the Democrats are being obstructionists by not giving in. And he's blaming, Mitch McConnell is blaming Democrats for this by not giving the president his $5.7 billion. He originally wanted $25 billion, and plus he's going to give 3 years of DACA protection, which basically allows Donald Trump to go to the election in 2020 and say, if you elect me, I will throw the DACA kids out of the country. Which is because he's going, because he has the opportunity to do it 1 year in to his second term if he wants to do that. Is that the future that we're looking at?
You know, I do. I've been saying all along that I think it would put pressure on the Democrats if Republicans or President Trump brought something that would bear him political costs and was something that they wanted. So that would be legalization for the Dreamers, something permanent in exchange for his wall, which is a demand that took place after the government was shut down under Republican control. As we all know, we're looking back this year, the Trump administration requested $1.6 billion, and from the unified Republican government, they got $1.6 billion. What was approved by voice vote. And then he decided, because of the results of the election and or Ann Coulter's Twitter feed, to change his mind and make this demand. It's not enough for Democrats to get extensions of protections for TPS and DACA recipients in exchange for basically what they're saying is an unreasonable demand. So if he goes far enough and says permanent, you know, legalization for the Dreamers, I think they're in a tough spot and they would probably have to give in to something, you know, he could call a wall. But, you know, they were other poison pills, as they like to call them, in the proposal, restricting, you know, narrowing criteria for refugee status further and more limits on legal immigration. It's not something that they can tell their voters, yeah, we're cool with that, we had to end the shutdown, you know, and take that as a good deal. So it's again, the Democrats are in a bad place because he's flooded the zone. He intends to swarm all of 2019 in this perpetual fight so that they can't be messaging Medicare for All or whatever they want to talk about before 2020. But at the same time, if they give in to this, he's going to do it again in March, and he's going to do it again on September 30th. Those are the next two cliffs we face, with the debt ceiling being reached and the next fiscal year being requiring more government funding. And he will say 5.7 wasn't enough. Now I need another 5.7 because a wall, as we know, doesn't cost $5 billion. So, you know, Republicans acknowledge this privately. How could they possibly give in to the hostage threat? I mean, I don't, you know, this is the Democrats' quandary that they're in now.
Right. And mm-hmm. so Republicans don't want to necessarily have to deal with this if there's a Democratic president. Right. I mean, that's
if Republicans basically will admit to you that if this was Obama and Obama looked at them in the Oval Office and said, I'm going to shut the government down, they'd be like, ha ha. You just told the American public you were shutting the government down. Call us when you're climbing down, fool, because they would. They would never let him take them hostage. What they're saying now is it's the Democrats' problem because they don't want to join. Republican senators don't want to join Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, and Cory Gardner in being on the record against Trump and saying it's time to open the government back up. They don't want to put something on the floor to reopen the government and just provoke a veto, which is what I think they should do.
Am I crazy? All right, don't answer that right first. Let me ask the question about this. Am I crazy to think that the most consequential piece of information we have learned about Donald Trump, the piece that ties everything together, is really the Moscow Trump Tower? That's the piece.
I completely agree.
So I'm not crazy.
I think all of this is intended for us to not think about the fact that there's only three factors we need to know. Donald Trump was in negotiations all through his candidacy and up until the election day for a deal that requires the approval of the president of the Russian Federation. While our 17 intelligence, this is point number two, agencies were telling the campaigns of Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump they're interfering in the election. And, you know, during the transition informed him it was to bring Hillary down and to elect him. And point number three, Putin knew all along that Trump was lying to the public and therefore had this over Trump and he was compromised. Those three things are what the whole Trump team does not want us focus on. They want us talking about the shutdown and they want us talking about Rudy Giuliani's word salad of the day.
But his word salad, Rudy Giuliani admitted it. See, this is the problem. Rudy Giuliani told us exactly,
yes,
as his lawyer,
yes,
he tells exactly what we were supposed to not know. You see, that's
I understand, but the Rudy two-step, I believe, because Jeff Toobin said this when I was on CNN with him this morning, that what he thinks is that the Raskins, the Mr. and Mrs. Raskin and Emmett Flood, the lawyers who actually are lawyers and not just like TV spokesmen for Trump,
yeah,
and are really dealing with the special counsel's office, likely made the president answer honestly in his written comments, answers to responses to Mueller.
Right.
And so what Rudy's doing is he does a Rudy Giuliani two-step where he says something and then he takes it back. So that when we find out that all this Moscow Project stuff is true and it went on through November of 2016, it's not so shocking because it's old.
Yeah, but it doesn't.
So
but isn't
what he
that...
does is he barfs it out and then he takes it back the next day, but it's all intentional.
But then it's clear, right? I mean, you know, they always said the Republicans put up an 8-year fight over Whitewater, which was a domestic small potatoes real estate deal that never came to fruition. You're going to have a lot of testimony here, including of the kids and everything else. And maybe they didn't tell the truth in this. We'll find out about that. That this was a real deal against a strategic rival who was actually meddling, not a bunch of lawyers in Arkansas and North Texas. I mean, that should be a big deal.
Right, and that's exactly right, and that's why it doesn't matter about Cohen and the BuzzFeed story. What matters is that if we had known this, it's likely a majority of voters would have decided he was compromised by an adversarial government and he would not have won the election, which is Putin's goal. Yeah. So that's the thing. I mean, and I I give credit to Jim Vandehei, who founded Axios. He said this a few months ago, and he said it again today. If it wasn't a drip drip and we found this out in one day at one time, forget it.
Yeah.
That would have collapsed everything.
Well, I think it still collapses everything in 2020 for him. So, as I told you last week, it's not going to be Trump-Pence.
Yeah, it's going to be very hard for Republicans to say this is cool. I know they're trying to come around to find everything cool. Collusion's cool. Conspiracies are cool. Obstruction's cool. Witness tampering's cool. Everything's cool. And the Moscow Project's going to be a really tough one to accept.
Yeah.
It's just unbelievable, and that's I really think all of this is designed to flood the zone and make sure that we're not talking about that those three things.
AB Stoddard says I wasn't crazy, at least on this one issue, at this one point moment. Well,
you
I don't
are
know.
So not crazy.
Yeah, there we go. There we go.
Oh, it's that's on the record.
There we go. And I would take her word for it.
Very intelligent person.
You and I are. It's not that we're all three of us are not going to end up in the crazy house after this is all over. But right now, you're not crazy.
Right. I have a lot. There. I have a
this
lot of
very moment.
Medical professionals will tell you that I am. So this is good. I need journalistic professionals to say I'm not, and then it works out. All right, AB.
No, you're still employable. You've met the threshold.
Barely. AB, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
All right, AB Stoddard. You can read her at realclearpolitics.com. Let's check in now with Kim Gordon, who's coming up in the WGN newsroom.
The city's finance committee met today without embattled Alderman Ed Burke.
Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis.
Yes.
And the Lazy Susan, as we like to call it, and that is, no one should be offended if their name is Susan.
It's in a very respectful way, we mean that.
Of mayoral candidates continues right here on the show. And Bill Daley is with us. And I will just ask you this, because this is a question that a lot of people have. Obviously, you have an incredible resume as a businessman and in the world of governance, right? Not really a politician. Because I don't think you've never really run for anything,
no,
right?
Never.
But you know, obviously you were chief of staff to the president of the United States. Mm-hmm. You were the commerce secretary. You've certainly been around, and your name is synonymous with governance in Chicago. If people have grievances, and they do, and elections are often about grievances. I think this particular election and for the mayor of Chicago is going to be about grievances. They're upset about the state of Chicago. Is the Daley name an impediment?
I look at it this way, Ro, and that's a fair question. There are those who like us based upon the terms of my brother Rich, or my dad even. Mm-hmm. But my dad's been dead for 40 years, so that's a long time ago. But all I can ask for people is to look at my record, look at what I'm saying, judge me. Every person knows, every family knows, siblings aren't identical. I took a different path. I was not a career politician like Rich. Mm-hmm. That, no disparaging of that. That was his choice. I spent my career in the business sector, along with doing the service that you said to our government. So I think it brings a unique blend of understanding government and politics, being around it all my life, but not being of it. So I come to this, and if you look at some of the ideas I've thrown out, very unconventional for someone that you would say was a Daley, shrinking the council, merging CPS and the city colleges, and a whole host of other things. So all I can ask is people to judge me based upon what I've done, who I am, and what I want to do with this city.
You caused some shouting by the city council members today when you decided that it was from 50 to 15. You right. want to bring the alderman down. 15 is enough. And is it a cost-cutting move that motivates you on this, or what is it? What's behind that proposal?
Look, at the system we have with 50 aldermen was created in the early part of the last century. And it was basically where all city services went through the alderman. All city services.
Right.
City Hall meant nothing.
They are their own fiefdoms, every single
But they
ward.
Really were, a long time ago, complete fiefdoms. That's changed. The public's different. Our political system. You don't have the machine, the organization, that whole structure there that supported that old system. And we look to the aldermen basically as mini mayors. That's changed. So I think we ought to come up to the 21st century, take a look at what should the aldermen be. They should be less mini mayors and more legislators who are there not trying to do the executive's job, but do the legislative job of setting
represent
the policy.
Represent those people.
Represent their wards, no doubt about it. And of the top 10 largest cities in America, L.A. is 17, and they have 4 million. New York does have 50, but they're 9 million people. They're three times the size of us.
Right. And they have a borough overlay that's different than us, too.
Yeah, very different. But the size of it is just enormous. We have 2.7 million people with 50 aldermen. There's less than 60,000 people in a ward.
So you say make a ballot referendum, see what the people want, and if they want it, you'd put forth change in that area.
Absolutely. And it would coincide with the census, and the redistricting map would be based on that, and they would go into effect 2023 in the first municipal election.
Because we're undoubtedly going to lose population here in the new census. I mean, it seems
like
a foregone.
We've lost it for 3 straight years.
Right, foregone conclusion. All right, so now this idea of the city colleges and the CPS.
Mm-hmm.
What's the benefit?
I think we have to look at a lot of structures of government, again, that were established 70, 80, 90 years ago, some of them. And there's no industry, there's no company that's still structured as was then, except government. If you look at our education system, what I'm saying is step back. We should be taking kids from K through 14 and saying, this is our system. At the end of the 14 years, you can come out of there with an associate's degree, ready for life and ready for jobs. And there are plenty of jobs that all you need is a two-year education. We have and we've had great success in growing the number of kids who go to four-year colleges from CPS.
Mm-hmm.
But only 18% of them finish college in 6 years. So they don't finish college. They're left with debt, with no real career ahead of them.
Mm-hmm.
And as opposed to starting in grammar school and preparing these kids along the way through high school to be ready after 14 years of free education to get a job, have a career, have a life. Now those who want to go on to 4 year or become a brain surgeon or a lawyer, they can do that. But the vast majority of kids want to have a career and have an opportunity
to be job ready, essentially, and that's what it would do.
Right.
One of the things, I started this out about grievances because we're not Chicagoans if we're not complaining about something. But I do think that the Chicago public school system takes it on the chin. There are some of the best schools in the nation are Chicago public schools. And in terms of the, we used to call them junior colleges, but in terms of these, associate degree institutions, the Chicago city colleges are pretty great. There's some really good programs in those.
There are a lot of programs, but their graduation rate is maybe about 15% of the kids who go there. So what I'm saying is take that and make it part of the entire system K through 14.
But once they're 18, they can choose not to stay if
they
don't want to.
But if the system is 14 years with a free education and coming out of that they're better prepared, I think most kids would.
And we're already paying for it. It's not as though you're asking for additional dough for this.
Right.
It's like this is what they're already doing. All right, speaking of dough, how are we going to pay for any of this?
Well, the truth of the matter is our short-term economic position is much better than it was a few years ago. Now, that's because of a lot of taxes raised, let's be honest. So I think we're in pretty good shape. I've said I will not have a property tax increase. And after the first year, if I have to raise property taxes, we'll have $1 of cuts for every dollar of property tax increase. The truth of the matter is the long-term fiscal situation of this city has to be addressed. And that revolves around having to deal with the pension issue. We have 50,000 retirees in the city of Chicago, and 35,000 present employees. That's 85,000 people, less than 3% of the population of Chicago. And that amounts to a $26 billion anchor long-term around our neck. If we do not open up the Constitution to have honest negotiations to change this system, along with new revenue, you cannot solve the long-term economic situation.
What is the change in the system that you need?
You have to change the Constitution so that management...
The state Constitution.
Everyone's talking about revenue, casinos, marijuana, all of those. And I've said put those all on the table. But we must have a way to put on the benefits. Not to make the... Some people want to do this all on the backs of the retirees. That's not fair. On the other hand, you can't put it all on the backs of the taxpayers because there'll be nobody left here.
So would people who are expecting a pension that are that are over the age of 40, let's say, because you got a lot of police officers and stuff like that are going to be aging out in their 40s, city workers, right? Would it affect them?
I don't think so. I think we could do a mix of things that it wouldn't. But let me give an example. You could have a police officer retire at 50, live to 90, and he gets a pension, or she gets a pension, along with 3% COLA compounded every year for 40 years. We just can't afford that. The people who are, and most of the city retirees who I respect and know a lot of them, and friends of mine and relatives of mine, many of them, when they retire, they leave and go to Florida or wherever. Mm-hmm. Those of us left have to pay that obligation until they die, and maybe 30, 40 years after they retire.
Do you think that it is palatable for our state legislators to actually pass some kind of constitutional change that hasn't worked in the past?
Well, then what's the solution? I think it ought to be put to the voters, put it on the ballot, let the voters decide. Okay?
It would have to be for a constitutional convention,
right? Yeah, it has to be.
Yeah.
But in my opinion, Anna, no one's laid out a solution long-term to this problem. Every mayor, every governor, every alderman, every legislator has kicked this can for years.
No question.
And that's the problem. And so I'm saying at this point, and I'm not doing this for another job or run for another office, that at some point we've got to face up to reality. You may have fake news, but you don't have fake math, and the math doesn't work.
Bringing more people back to Chicago, as we were discussing earlier, the population decline is not something you want to see, especially in this financial environment. You want more people to want to live in the city, want more businesses here. What's your plan for that?
I set out a goal of 300,000 more people, get us back to 3 million people over the next 10 years. It's 30,000 a year. If we were able to get back to 3 million, that would be an additional $290 million in revenue to the city of Chicago and the vibrancy of certain neighborhoods.
Right.
So we obviously have to address the crime issue. We have to get our schools straightened out. We have to do a lot of things to encourage those people to come back or new people to move here. We have had about 140,000 people over the last 8 years move into the city. And that's what you see in the boom around downtown and near north and near south. And we celebrate that. So we have to keep that economic boom going. But we've got to create a climate that people, along with the young people who come here at a very young age, I think we're still the number one destination for college graduates. But when they have a family, we've got to keep them.
Yeah, we've got to keep. But it's property taxes and it's the schools. Right? And to some degree, crime. But even in those neighborhoods that we're talking about, I mean, it is amazing. When you drive around the city of Chicago, there are neighborhoods that, as a lifelong only living in the city, there are parts of the city I drive into and I go, where did this come from?
It's so
right?
cool.
There, I mean, it's amazing.
Right.
To your point. But the problem is, if property taxes are high and the fear of crime and this fear that the schools are going to be substandard for their kids, you do have all of those factors, right? So you already addressed the schools. You already addressed, kind of the economic thing here because you don't want to raise the property taxes anymore. But God knows what the county is going to do. The final piece here is crime. And this is something. I mean, the Daily Family and city services are inextricably linked, right? I mean, you got this. You know, if you know anything about anything, it would be this. What is it that you see to solve this problem?
I think there's a combination of things. And I laid out, you go on my website, dailyformayor.com, you'll see a pretty extensive plan. We have to address the gun issue. Legislature has to get tougher. Today, in Illinois, if you are caught in possession of a gun illegally, that is a misdemeanor. So we're sending a message right there. It's not that serious of a crime. Okay? So the legislature's got to begin to take this more seriously. We also have to get better trained police officers. Police officers basically come out of the academy, and I'm for a new academy because they ought to have the best technology as they get trained and retrained. But when a police officer leaves and goes on the job historically, they never get trained again in any serious way. We've got to change that so they're better at the job they do. And I'm a big believer that the vast majority of the police officers, men and women, go out every day to protect us. The third piece of this, which is just as important, is violence prevention reduction. I've said I'd commit $50 million and a deputy mayor to run it to work with these organizations that are working with these young men, mostly between 18 and 27, who have committed a crime or been involved in this activity and changed their lives. And it's working. Arnie Granite's got a program called CRED. Heartland Alliance has got a program called READY. These are programs where they're actually ready, is actually using predictive analysis to determine who will be these young men who will get in trouble and go to them and try to interdict them and say, let's get you on a different path. L.A. and New York do that, the police departments, and they view that as an integral part of having the lower statistics on murders and shootings that we have, about 75% less in one city that has 4 million, another one that has 9 million.
You've got the progressive movement with so much momentum nationwide and here in Chicago and quite a few progressive candidates. How do you appeal to those voters who do want social change? They want some. They don't like exactly what they're seeing, and they feel as if government is not necessarily representing them.
Well, look at that. First of all, there's no progressive or moderate or conservative way to fill a pothole or really address crime. There's no doubt we must have better social justice in our systems, whether it's criminal justice system, the sense that the services aren't being given. But the reality is, if we don't continue the economic growth in this city or make it even stronger, all of our best intentions get harder to do for those who are less fortunate than us. So we've got to make sure that we can spread some of these benefits out. But if we go into an economic recession, or God forbid, something like 08, that just makes these problems much worse, and much worse for the people who live in communities that are troubled right now. So I think I get the progressive movement, but we also have to make sure that the business climate in this city, and I'm proud of the support I've gotten from the business community, they hire the people. It's the private sector, not the government. The government can be a catalyst for some change, but you need the investment of the private sector to believe that the leadership of the city is about the future, growing it, helping them hire more people. We've got to get them to hire more people from parts of the city that have been cut out and make this city more inclusive.
All right. Bill Daley wants to be your mayor. Website again?
DaleyForMayor.com.
That was your father's website, wasn't it, too? Didn't he have that as well?
Was it available? Did he charge you for it?
So. I don't think so.
That's amazing. I don't know why someone didn't squat on that years ago.
Seriously.
But they did.
Yeah, just sit on it. It's too bad I didn't.
Yeah, I know. You should have bought it and then sold it to your brother. That looks. All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
appreciate it, Bill Daley.
Thanks,
good luck to you out there on the campaign trail. Let's check in now with Kim Gordon. What's coming up in the news at the bottom of the hour?
Ro, it's not weather delaying trains at Union Station tonight.
Ro Khan Show with Anna DeBlantis right here. Kim Gordon on news. You got the Kevin Powell.
Yeah,
K-Powell.
As he's otherwise known.
On the sports. And Pam Jones filling in for traffic with us. And I just want to say that before we go any further, I want to mention Mariano Rivera. You mentioned it in your sports.
Mm-hmm.
As the first guy ever to get into the Hall of Fame with 100% of the votes.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason for that.
There is. He probably shouldn't be the first one to get 100% of the vote. I mean, Ken Griffey got, 97%? He was the closest a couple of years ago. There are guys like Ted Williams who didn't get 100% of the vote. So I think people are happy to see this happen. The guy's the all-time career saves leader, 652 saves. Griffey had 99% of the vote, by the way. But, all 425 votes, he got them. And nothing but a good guy. You hear about Rivera, and just dominant closer. It just felt like he never had a down season his entire career.
I just want to throw a couple numbers at you, and then we'll just move on to other more pressing issues. Mm-hmm. But you talk about a guy who deserves, one of the greatest people ever to pick up a baseball as a pitcher. He played for one team, essentially, for his entire career, right? The Yankees, 95 to 2013. 13 times he was an All-Star. 5 World Series rings. The World Series MVP in 1999. American League MVP in 2003. He got all kinds of those other little awards that come, comeback player of the year, all the rest of that stuff. He, the leader in saves in 1999, 2001, 2004, 3 times, 652 times.
Mm-hmm.
He said 652 times he saved a game. And I think is the most amazing thing. He had a, that whip number, there's all this sabermetrics crap that goes on now. I don't know. I watched that, that baseball movie, right, with mm-hmm. with Brad Pitt. I don't understand a word of what goes on in it. I just know ERA and RBI. That's all I care about in home runs. But he's got that whip number, which is that's hits.
Walks and hits per
walks
inning
and
pitch.
Hits per inning pitched, yeah. Right? It's 1.0.
Yeah, flat one.
Flat one, which means that only one guy gets, on average, gets on base, right? So that, it's like the most, he was as dominant as ever, and he also became the guy that had the walk-on music. He was the first guy to have the walk-on music as a reliever,
mm-hmm.
right?
Metallica
Sandman.
That's right.
Right? Enter the Sandman, and he was the Sandman.
That's right.
All right.
Dominant closer, known for exploding baseball bats with that devastating cutter. Great baseball player.
Yeah, it was. And so as baseball season is kind of around the corner, White Sox, it's the fan festival on Friday. Oh, it's over the weekend. We're going to be there on Friday.
Yeah, we'll be out there.
And I just think it's so, especially in the American League, to be as dominant as that when you have to face designated hitters.
Right.
As a closer.
In that division?
Yeah. Right, in the AL East. It's pretty great. So I hats off to for baseball fans all over the world, really. He's Panamanian,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's throughout Central America and everything. I mean, he's a god. But that, it just, you stop and you think about it, is baseball, think about the good old days of baseball. This is a guy who made the closer. The closer has been around for a long time now, but this, he perfected it.
No
Couldn't
question.
Be better. All right. Now, there are fans who want to sue the NFL mm-hmm. so that there is a replay of the entire NFC Championship game.
Yep, 580,000 people have signed a petition to get the game overturned. The governor of Louisiana has sent a message to Roger Goodell saying, while the people of Louisiana are resilient and we have overcome setbacks before.
Yes, like hurricanes.
like
things
Katrina.
That matter a little bit more.
Yeah.
Yeah. This one's still big up there, and they want to see that game replayed.
I mean, they're going nuts down there. There's a businessman who's got all these billboards now that are basically taking shots at the NFL. Some bars are boycotting the Super Bowl. They're not going to show the Super Bowl if people want to go to the bar during the game. They're going to have like some counter programming on the bar TV.
I think we should get Nathan Phillips to go down there and bang the drum. In Roger Goodell's office, maybe go up there and just do, maybe Roger Goodell versus Nathan right there, like at the NFL headquarters in New York. Let's do that.
Yeah, it's like a peace thing,
Yeah, maybe you must replay the game.
Yeah, make
over
peace
the weekend
with Saints fans.
And one more game, even give Tom Brady a running start.
Right. It'd be more football. It'd be fun. A lot of people are pointing to this rule 17, Section 2, Article 1.
Yes, sure. I remember that one.
You remember that one.
My favorite
Yes. Some of your favorite reading is the NFL rule book. I know. you and your attorney
to
have to do
track.
It because it's like impossible and you don't want to offend anybody. Can you kneel? Can you not kneel?
Right.
What can you do? What you can
like
you say?
To keep that handy when you're watching football so you can really understand what's going on.
What does the rule state? I'd like to state it.
Well, so this is the chunk everybody keeps putting on social media that says the commissioner could do something. Has the, quote, sole authority, the commissioner has the, quote, sole authority to investigate and take appropriate disciplinary and or corrective measures if any club action, non-participant interference, or calamity occurs in an NFL game, which the commissioner deems
one.
So extraordinarily unfair or outside the accepted tactics encountered in pro football that such action has a major effect on the result of the game.
Yeah, you have to. The law offices in Louisiana are suing them.
Yeah.
Over
so
this.
When you read that, you're like, well, maybe he could do something. But the part everyone's leaving out is this part. Quote, the commissioner will not apply authority in cases of complaints by clubs concerning judgmental errors or routine errors of omission by game officials. So I think that line there sort of takes this out of play.
Negates the other one.
Plus the whole thing. This is
not if you take it to
anyway.
Not if you take it to a parish court in Louisiana.
No.
Now, listen here. What we have here, boys, is a failure to win the game by my beloved Saints. I mean, this is going to be...
Well, but think about how we feel as Bears fans. I mean, look how badly we felt when, Parkey, double-doing the...
Yeah, but that was on us.
No, exactly. That was on us, and that's how bad we felt about it. Imagine if this was not on us.
And two referees were standing right in front of the play.
I mean, it was
right
so
in front of the play.
Clear.
And they've apologized. Yes. The head of officiating.
They should have never done that.
They shouldn't have done that because it kind of admitted it, right? They just did. They put it out there.
That's all it is. People apologizing these days. That's what I'm telling you.
Everybody who is running for president on the Democratic side has apologized for something. Everyone. They start with, I'm so sorry to have to do this, but...
That tweet from 12 years ago.
I once called gay people evil.
Didn't mean
and
that.
I didn't really mean it at all.
Totally meant the opposite.
I didn't. Because
they're great people.
I've learned a lot in these last 12 years, even though I was an adult when I said it.
Well, you like this.
Shut up.
I know, right? It's like the total reverse position that somehow makes sense. But you'll like this one, Ro. It's that the two-season ticket holders from the Saints are also suing, saying they include they want damages from the NFL, including for mental anguish,
there
emotional trauma, and loss of enjoyment of life.
Wow. What we had, the parish judge also is going to represent as a lawyer in that case, too. Wow. Now, what we have here, Yana, clearly is a loss of the enjoyment of life. What price can we put on the loss of enjoyment of life? No price at all, except for $1 billion.
That sounds about right.
I can relate. You know, after that double doink, I've been in a deep depression. Still not over
it. I know. Could we sue Cody Parker for the loss of enjoyment of life? If we could, I would do it. There's no end to the ridiculousness. You know what? I'll tell you. You know what the problem is?
Mm.
Roger Goodell invites this. By his general insipidness. It's like every time you see Roger Goodell, you just get mad. I never felt that way about Pete Rozelle. I never felt that way about Paul Tagliabue or any other commissioner of any other sport. But Roger Goodell, somehow, when you look at Roger Goodell, you go, that smug SOB. There's something about him.
He looks like the kid from Kentucky, the Covington kid. A little smirk on his face.
Right, and that poor SOB, what did he ever do? Right, he just showed up and he was smiling and acting awkward in front of a guy banging a drum.
And he had a MAGA hat on.
Right, with a MAGA hat.
A cherry on top,
yeah,
literally.
Yeah, that, right.
That was the cherry on top.
Although the MAGA hat, I sort of got, it's like wearing a middle finger on your head.
It totally
is. It just does it. It just does it. But the reality is that there's something about Goodell. And it's because he's like quiet, and then when he does say something, you get mad because he's trying to sort of have it both ways, no matter what he's saying. And you know he's just representing the. It's like you just imagine him going back to the fully solid gold desk and the solid gold offices. There's two solid gold offices in New York City: Trump's and the NFL's, right? And that's it. And they're like two blocks from each other.
Roger Goodell's got to be happy though with the LA New England matchup.
Yeah,
just
Boston,
for ratings,
LA matchup?
And, right? Oh, yeah. I mean, think
gonna
about
be
that.
Going to be monster ratings for the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably.
Oh, yeah. And there should be. And football is a great game. I mean, I'm not trying to blow up football. I don't believe in any of that crazy stuff that goes on with, you know, there's just too much of the trying to politicize everything. But
at least
this
is about making the game better rather than whether or not, you know, you should make a political
stand. This isn't political. This was obvious.
Right.
I don't want to politicize everything. I just want to make football. Football is the most malleable sport. Remember, it took like baseball 100 years to add technology that they could have put in. They could have put it in 50 years ago, and they refused to do. Right. So at least in football, every year they put out like it's like weather warnings. They put out another statement about some sort of a change that we have to get used to, right? There's at least five major rule changes every year, and it does seem that. And I get why you can't review pass interference. I understand that's.
That's going to change.
Yeah. Why can't you?
I think you're kind of opening a door to
too much.
You'd have to put it on the coaches. It would have to be a coaches only challenge.
Because or you have someone in the league's office, because some of these are so blatant and obvious. Like that play, right? Even if a team didn't have a challenge or was under 2 minutes or whatever, that some guy in some room with 4,000 TV screens and all the technology could be watching that game and say, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, whoa! Everybody, hang on. Let me call this in. Everybody, stop, and we're going to change the ruling here." Doesn't necessarily have to be throw a red flag or throw another challenge,
right?
But some of this stuff is so blatantly obvious.
All right.
I agree.
I agree, too.
I feel for Saints fans.
I do. I do, too.
I kind of do.
Robbed.
Yeah, totally robbed. That's right. And Roger Goodell should have to pay $1 billion to the Saints fans.
Seems about right.
And apologize.
Right, he should apologize. I'd like to say I'm really sorry for what happened in the game against the Saints. That was really bad what happened.
We didn't really mean it.
We were super stoked that we're going to have LA and New England.
The LA Rams are going to win the thing. All right. LA Rams going to get killed, I think, in that game. We'll talk to Vic about it next week.
Yeah,
don't worry
Vic
about
it. But he always doesn't. He always seems to stray from the Patriots.
Yeah, well, it's going to be hard, I think, this year. All right, let us now check in. Let's do the last traffic of the afternoon, Pam.